mean that a survey is required in every case of false advertising?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. If a plaintiff tries to prove that a claim is misleading or impliedly false as opposed to literally false...
I don't get that distinction.
Well, Your Honor, the distinction has been clear, at least since this Court's decision in Abbott Labs, that says...
Not clear to me.
Well, Your Honor,
this disclaimer that you rest your case on was in Sanskrit.
Your Honor, if
it would be necessary in a case like that, because that wouldn't be false, of course, be a correct translation. So would it be necessary in a case like that to have a survey to ask whether consumers were misled?
If you really were basing your case on the disclaimer, Your Honor, again, I think the point is here...
No, you didn't answer my question.
Your Honor, if...
You didn't answer my question.
Once, Your Honor, with respect
no,
to...
No, you answer my question.
If, once you are...
It's not an if.
Your Honor...
It's yes or no.
If you are in the world of implied falsity, Your Honor...
You can't speak without if in your... I'm giving you a very precise question. The disclaimer is in Sanskrit. So there's nothing false. It really says the same thing that your English disclaimer says, just in Sanskrit. And my question is, since this is merely misleading and not false, sure, does it require a survey to demonstrate unlawfulness?
It requires evidence of consumer...
You wouldn't answer my question.
Okay, the answer...
I asked you, does it require a survey?
It does not require a survey, Your Honor.
What does it require?
It requires some evidence
of... No, it doesn't.
Well, Your Honor, then you're disagreeing with my answer.
In my hypothetical case, the ad is misleading without the disclaimer... The disclaimer is unintelligible, and therefore, it's an unlawful ad.
But again, Your Honor, the premise of your question was the ad is misleading without the disclaimer. How do we know that the ad is misleading?
I gave you an example.
Correct.
In which the ad is misleading without a disclaimer.
Is misleading, Your Honor said, and my point is,
it's misleading without the disclaimer. The disclaimer is, because it's unintelligible, it does not eliminate the misleading aspect of it.
Fair enough. But again, the premise of your hypothetical, Your Honor, is that the ad is misleading. The threshold question is it literally false? Again,
it's not a threshold question.
It's
clearly misleading. See, in my case... You make the comparison, you have an unintelligible disclaimer. There's no falsity, but it's extremely misleading.
Right. Yeah, right.
You don't need any evidence in that case besides the ad itself.
Your Honor, the law says you need to have evidence of consumer confusion, except where you're in the realm of literal falsity. If you look at this Court's decision in Abbott Labs, I'll quote.
You have to look at these decisions with respect to their facts. We just had a case under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act a few weeks ago where we posed the question, do you need a consumer survey or other evidence in every false advertising or misleading or deceptive advertising case? And the answer is no, because if it's perfectly clear that it's not deceptive, or if it's perfectly clear that it is deceptive on its face, then you don't have to fill up the record with evidence of consumer confusion.
Your Honor, again, I think that the key point here is we are dealing in the realm of speech. It is generally true, particularly at the preliminary injunction stage, that courts generally don't need evidence to come in. They can kind of give you an impressionistic view. In this area, it is also true that there is no First Amendment right to engage in false or misleading advertising. So the question is, when somebody comes in and says, Court, I would like you to enjoin this speech, the question then is, what is the burden that the movement has to show in that circumstances?
Well, the court has... you call it speech, it's an ad. If the ad is clearly misleading, then of course you can enjoin it.
Your Honor, with respect.
If it's clear, then you don't have to take evidence from consumers.
With respect, Your Honor, the line that has been drawn is not clearly misleading versus not clearly misleading, which frankly is kind of in the eye of the beholder. That would create kind of the Justice Stewart obscenity test. I mean, the line that has been drawn creates a narrow realm of literally false speech where courts can say...
That doesn't make any sense. Look, issues of deception arise all over the law. Trademarks is here, you know, consumer protection statutes, all sorts of places. And if it's and you know, the court looks at the ad, sometimes it's perfectly clear from an ad that it is extremely misleading, right? I mean, what if it makes a statement which would be false if it weren't qualified.
Well, the qualification.
And it has a qualification, and the qualification is, as in my Sanskrit example, is, you know, it's in too small type, can't be read, or it's in the wrong language or something. There's no literal falsity in that case, but surely you do not need evidence.
I thought Your Honor said at the beginning of your hypo the ad was false and then it has the qualification. A qualification cannot resuscitate
False without a qualification. A qualification, of course, can convert a false statement into a true statement.
No, Your Honor, but the law is clear that if the statement is literally false, then a qualification cannot...
That's not true.
The other side, the parties actually have pointed to case law that has held that.
Let me take it to the facts of this case. One of the problems with your ad is it indicates that everything Comcast does is analog. And if you had a qualification that said, half of their broadcasts are analog and half of them are digital, whatever numbers, I don't care what the numbers are. I know the parties have fussed around with the numbers. But if you had that qualification, that would sharpen the claim and would make it correct. Well, even though standing by itself to imply that everything Comcast does is analog is certainly false.
It doesn't say everything they do is analog. It says more people voted DirecTV's picture quality superior to cable.
Right,
the question is the word cable.
But cable is not all analog. It's a fallacy. It's just like other cases where you take one of a set and you pretend that that's the entire set, but there are actually other things in it.
But those are not literal.
That's the only thing you tested.
Well, Your Honor, those are not literal falsity cases. Again, I think
sure
this kind of goes
is.
Back. Well, you know, Your Honor, because it is literally true that more people voted DirecTV superior to cable.
It would be like saying all judges on the Seventh Circuit are men. Some of them are.
No, but that is a literally false statement,
some are
Your
not.
Honor. No, that's
okay, take that. All judges on the Seventh Circuit are men. Then in fine print, when we say man, we mean a person who has a masculine intellect, is tough, is ruthless. and so
I think I want to touch this hypothetical.
That footnote would make it would make it truthful.
Your Honor, I know. I see. I think that where these
that
questions
footnote would make it truthful, right?
Your Honor, that is not the claim here. The claim, the assertion, the question is the statement without the disclaimer. They came in and they said it is literally.
I gave you that example. Without the disclaimer, all judges on the Seventh Circuit are male.
Right. That is false. That is false.
Now, with a disclaimer, you explain, well, you're speaking metaphorically.
Right.
Masculine minds.
In the settled law, Your Honor, to date, Your Honor is obviously welcome to alter this, but the settled law.
What is my case that I've just given you?
You have given a literal falsity case.
It's not literal falsity with a disclaimer. The disclaimer has taken it back.
Well, Your Honor, again, the law is that a disclaimer cannot take back. It's not effective to take back the literally false statement.
That's how language works. You read something in isolation, it looks false. Well, you know, what if you say, look, the judges on the Seventh Circuit are cool cats. Now, the footnote explains we don't mean literally. We mean they're cool, they're elegant, you know, they have sharp claws, what have you, right?
But But, you know, maybe we're obsessing too much about this word disclaimer, because the truth is, I think the idea that we're getting at is that once you have looked at all of the statements in the ad, the primary statement and the statement across the bottom of the screen or whatever,
right.
the thing that you're calling a disclaimer, it's only then that you have the full context of what's being said. I'm reminding of the Joe Isuzu commercials where outrageous things are said and there's a gigantic thing at the bottom
right.
of the screen that says, this man is lying.
But you're right. If I could just go back, Your Honor, to the premise of your question. Again, the point is, it is not literally false to say that more people voted DirecTV's picture quality superior to cable, because they themselves concede on page 33 of the red brief that the word cable is inherently ambiguous. What they have to say is that it is literally false, and this is what they say in their brief, that it is literally false because we are making a broad claim of superiority. But we're not. It doesn't say is superior to all cable.
But your test only looked at analog, as your little disclaimer said, your test only looked at analog.
Correct.
And so you don't know.
But
you're making a false statement.
What did the company that did the survey tell you? It said, this is what we actually found. Quote, in a blind evaluation among analog cable TV subscribers, DirecTV picture quality was judged to be the better by a significant margin versus analog cable picture quality.
Correct.
You don't say that in your ad.
No, Your Honor, that's in the Nidell email. But again, that email says right there, look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not saying that any other ad is illegal or is misleading. He was just giving something.
He was telling
something.
What the survey reported.
Well, he is just saying what. No, he was asked, in the email is a response to a question, can you give us an idea of what to say? And he said that, but he has the disclaimer
and
right
decided
there.
Decided not to follow what he suggested.
Well, Your Honor, again, there's not one way to do this. And again, but if I could just
except this one makes it clear you're only comparing it to analog.
But Your Honor, again, it's the key point here is that there is a world of misleading. We would ask the court not to blur these categories.
Suppose there were. Why do you want to multiply categories? Look. Suppose there were no disclaimer, how much evidence would they have to produce?
Well, Your Honor, again, if there were no disclaimer, what they have to do is they have to say, is it literally false? This is the way.
Well, would you stop that? If there is no, I ask you a simple question. If there is no disclaimer, what evidence do they have to produce to get their preliminary?
They have to produce some evidence of consumer confusion, and they produce none here.
Even when there's no disclaimer?
Yes, Your Honor, because it is a literally true statement.
Oh, that's such nonsense, really. Kirkland and Ellis would make such a bad argument.
Your Honor, but I mean, we're following the law. It is not for the judge to determine, based solely upon his or her own intuitive reaction, whether the advertisement is deceptive. I think Your Honor has been saying, I find this to be misleading. Unless it's literally false.
Well, without the disclaimer, it's obviously misleading.
Well, but you said obviously misleading, Your Honor.
Put the disclaimer in it.
Your Honor, again, obviously misleading is not, that's not the way these cases work. The cases work.
Summary judgment works, right? Judges are constantly saying, this is so clear cut, there's no room for a trial.
I understand, Your Honor. And the point is, and you know, in this is an exception to the, because it's a speech that's involved here, to the rule that generally.
This is not speeches, but this is not how false advertising is regulated.
Your Honor, again.
It's not treated like.
If I could quote from the 1-800 Contacts case, if the court deems an ad to be true but misleading.
General language, you're not looking at the facts.
No, but we are. In the Hot Wax case, I mean, it makes it very clear that the category of literal falsity where you need no evidence is a very narrow category that is literally false. What Your Honor is suggesting is what Your Honor is suggesting. Well, that was a Latches case.
What were the facts in that case?
Your Honor, that was a Latches case, but it's setting forth.
Well, wait a second. What I'm telling you, look, when lawyers come up and quote language out of context, it can be extremely misleading.
Your Honor,
now, you have a case which has facts like the case here. An obviously misleading statement once you strip away the disclaimer. And then the court holds, yeah, it's obviously misleading, but this is speech, and therefore we have to have a survey or we have to have consumers testify or something. Do you have a case like that in your brief?
Your Honor, the Abbott Labs case.
Can you answer my questions? Do you have a case like that you've discussed in your brief?
Your Honor, the Abbott Labs case is a preliminary injunction case, We're not relying on the disclaimer for this point. I guess that's the point. Your Honor is insisting that we're...
Why don't you answer my question? I said, suppose there's no disclaimer. Do you have a case which says no matter how misleading an ad is, if it isn't literally false, which is to say if there's some interpretation that would not make it literally false, nevertheless, there has to be a survey or other evidence?
Abbott Labs' case says precisely that. And
I'm not interested in what it says. I'm interested in what the facts are.
My reflection is that they required, they said that you need evidence there because it's not literally
what
false.
What was the claim? What was the ad?
The ad there had to do with Rice Light versus Pedialyte.
Isn't that what it had to do with? What was the ad? What was the representation that was so obviously misleading? Nevertheless, there had to be evidence.
Your Honor, I'll look at the ad during the break to answer you. But again, I think what you're suggesting, I would just say with all respect, is would be a market change in the law to say
no,
that a categorical approach...
Because what the law, you infer the law from a combination of general principles and facts in cases. You don't rest with a general principle. That's a source of...
Fair enough, Your Honor. But if I could try and justify why...
You don't know any... You don't actually know any claims as obviously misleading as this one, especially without the disclaimer, in which the court said, yeah, you know, it's obviously misleading, but we have this rule, so we're going to demand a survey.
Your Honor, again, I think the point is, it is something that is important. There's a reason that courts should want some evidence before you go enjoining speech. I mean, the question is, there is no constitutional or First Amendment interest.
Of course, forget the constitution. There's a reason. There's a reason. Of course there's a reason. If it's not obviously misleading, then it's dangerous for the judges. They're not the necessarily representative of the group targeted by the ad. But if it's obvious, that's why I'd like you to have had a case which said is like this. Yeah, the judges said it's obviously misleading, but you know it's speech, so we have to demand superfluous evidence, which we'd never demand.
Right, but the line between what is obviously misleading and not so obviously misleading is obviously going to be in the eye of the beholder. That's why courts have insisted on literal falsity as the touchstone.
I don't think they do, and you have not convinced me because you don't know what's in these cases.
If the one thing, Your Honor. Thank you.
I will give you a minute after.
Thank you.
Mr. Masters?
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. the first thing I was going to do is just address your point, Judge Kainan, because the email that you're referring to was characterized as seeking some kind of, I guess, advisory opinion. But the reality is that the marketer at DirecTV wanted to know what the study showed, what claims were made available to them to use based on this study. The question he asked was, what is the exact claim we can go forward with in an ad campaign? The person who conducted the study told them the answer to that. They chose not to do it. If you look through the survey report that was provided, the word analog or standard consistently is used to qualify the word cable in the results, in the setup of the purpose of the study, in discussing the design of the study. It was a study designed to test analog cable. It tested analog cable, and they ran an ad about cable. And now to address the point that's been, forcefully raised in the initial argument, this is really the second time that DirecTV is trying to derail an injunction based on the need for consumer perception evidence. If you go back to the Time Warner case, which is the first time that they got enjoined based on ads in this campaign, trying to claim superiority over cable. In that case, one of the ad claims was settling for cable would be illogical. This was Captain Kirk telling us that in a Star Trek context. And the judge said, In the context
actually
of that...
It should have been Spock, but anyway, it's illogical.
Probably, Your Honor. In the context of that case, the district court judge said, well, we know that when they say cable, they mean HD, high-definition cable. And that's not true.
But, so you know, the interesting thing about that, looking at these ads, is that it may not be the case DirecTV presented, but it appears to me that kind of the price-to-price comparison is that DirecTV is giving digital service for around the $30 a month mark, whereas Comcast is giving analog service for around the same price point. And, you know, sure, if you're willing to pay $100 a month, you know, versus the $30, maybe you'll get better service on the $100, one would hope. But there are interesting levels of how this can be miscompared, I think, from lots of sides.
I don't know if it's in the record, Your Honor, but I don't believe Comcast's model is to charge more for digital versus versus analog in the markets that where digital is available. I think the difference is that you have to pay to rent a different box, cable box, and those cable boxes cost more, I believe. But the actual service, I believe, is the same, and now the law has changed. I think you can provide digital boxes through third parties like Best Buy or Circuit City. You can have digital TVs where you don't need a box. But in any event, DirecTV came into the court in the Second Circuit and said, no, this isn't a false ad because we just said cable. We didn't say HD. And you got to look at it literally. You just got to look at the word we said. And you can't go and look at the context without evidence of consumer perception. And the district court rejected that, and the Second Circuit rejected that. And they said that that is not the test. That's not what's going on here. You got to look at the message in context. And here it's clear the cable means HD.
What if they had said, of the people we surveyed, you know, everyone preferred DirecTV. You know, we surveyed some of Comcast's customers, and everybody preferred DirecTV to Comcast. I mean, how many consumers really know that there's a difference between digital and analog anyway?
That is a good question as to what they would need to say in order for the ad to not be misleading. Their senior marketing vice president said, when you say cable, people understand that to be the cable they get in their house.
So for a lot of people, it was a true ad.
First, people who only get analog, of which there are some in the Comcast system,
there are a lot.
The ad would have been true as to them if they understood that it was about analog, and if they were not thinking that they might buy a digital service, that they might upgrade to HD, that they were in the market for something. I mean, they're being told this product is better than this product, not in a qualified way, in an absolute way. So that has an impact not just on what they're doing now, but it has an impact on their decisions in the future. So I don't know that we need to concede that it, just because you currently have analog service, and assuming you understand the significance of that, that necessarily makes the ad true.
But it's true for the people for whom cable means what I'm getting today, and that means analog.
It would be true for
at least a third of the customers, if not more, in the market, according to the statistics in the briefs.
Yes, there are a set of customers who only currently receive analog, who may in the future receive digital.
And some receive both. You know, maybe they have a digital box on their TV, and then they have another TV in the house that doesn't have a box, so one of them gets analog and one gets digital.
Correct. Yeah. That is correct. A mixture of digital and analog. Interestingly here, they're trying to take another whack at convincing the court that we need to have consumer perception evidence. They studied analog, they claim cable, and they throw a disclaimer in. And because they throw this disclaimer in, they seem to be saying, you can't ever enjoin an ad with a qualification without consumer evidence. We can take every case that would normally be a case that could be decided without consumer perception evidence and turn it into one where the party challenging the ad has to come in with a consumer survey just because we throw a disclaimer in.
And I want to ask you, Mr. Masters, about the installer survey. It seems to me many of these installers quite plainly are qualified to answer survey questions about picture quality. The installer twos, for example, who install the home theaters and all these other things.
It's certainly possible that some of them had the right qualifications.
Seems like all of them. If you're qualified to be an installer two as opposed to an installer one.
Well, I don't think that the record actually supports that. These installers are electrical installers, some of whom install home theaters, and some of them install other things. The testimony that was offered by the only witness that testified on this issue claimed that just being an installer doesn't mean you have familiarity with picture quality. And this was a picture quality test. Remember, this was a telephone test. They weren't shown anything.
Well, they had two other classifications beyond installer one and two. There were the designers that actually advised people on whether or not they should use cable or satellite TV, didn't they not?
That is correct, and they did not.
And those people didn't participate in the survey.
They did not, correct. So it was only installers one and installer level two.
And installers two. So an installer one is somebody who works with supervision to install wiring, cable components, and devices for low voltage electronics in residential applications, including home theater, audio, video, home automation, radio frequency, telephony, and data networks. And installer twos do even more than that. Troubleshooting, cheat sheets, et cetera.
And so supervision, I believe, as well.
Well, installer one, installer two, less so. So it seems to me those are the people who precisely are the ones that you call in to make sure the picture is doing what it should. They decide whether you need an amplifier. They decide all sorts of things. Of course,
First of all, it's a factual matter.
That's almost the same fallacy as the other side, that you can't ever think of a profession that you don't need somebody else to come in and testify what the people who are part of that profession can do.
Well, I don't think that's the case here. I mean, we're not challenging their qualifications as installers. We're challenging their qualifications to have sufficient familiarity with both of these products to make a picture quality comparison.
But you don't think they have picture quality? They don't install some cable, some satellite?
They do, but
of
perhaps they
do.
Install analog cable. Perhaps they don't install cable very much. Perhaps they're in an area where there isn't digital cable. We don't know whether people are comparing apples to apples in this telephone survey. What we do know
right.
on
and
page...
So it does seem to me that, I mean, I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill here. It seems to me that the installers almost certainly know the difference between analog and digital. And they, you know, just part of being somebody who works with TVs all the time would mean that you would know that.
Well, let me direct your attention to A140 in the record, which is when the witness from DirecTV who was called in to talk about the CD organization testified. And I'm reading here from page 199. Question, is it true with respect to the picture quality of DirecTV as well that it is not a requirement to have familiarity with it in order to sit for the installer one exam? Answer, depending, if you'd like a moment, I'll take a quick look here. But in looking at what level one, it's a person who works with supervision. They are physically an installer. And then it goes on to say, I don't know there would be any serious relevance to them being able to discern between a DirecTV picture, a dish network picture, a cable picture, an over-the-air antenna picture. They are a laborer to do that basic install. Question, right, and it's not part of the expertise that they need to be able to distinguish between the picture quality of those products. Is that what you were saying? Answer, that is what I'm saying, yes.
Yeah, and I guess you're reading more into that than I am. It seems to me, you know, that there are a lot of things that people do for a job, and expertise in some ancillary parts of that work comes along with it. If you were a babysitter, you might have an opinion about which diapers are better than others, even though that's not a qualification. You know, you'll take whatever somebody's giving you, and you use them, but you develop an opinion in the course of doing that work.
Well, the traditional way of figuring out if you've tested people with the requisite familiarity is to ask them. And that's the standard methodology. I don't think there's any dispute about that. You can look in the manual and scientific evidence. You can look in all of the expert literature. So the question is there a reason to deviate from that here? None was offered. The researcher refused to come and testify. They offered no explanation.
But then you're asking silly questions like, do you know Joe from Georgia, you know, sorts of questions. It seemed to me that didn't really advance the ball much.
Well, I mean, I think the point was that we know something about this organization. From the testimony, we know nothing about these people.
Now, how many classes of certification were there? One,
well,
two,
I know there's at least three: the designer and
the designer,
two.
The requirements for that is he or she does have to know about comparison between digital, analog, high definition, and all those things.
It's correct.
As part of the description of what that person must be qualified in, is that right?
That's correct.
And they did not survey that class.
They did not. They only surveyed these installer levels 1 and 2. And then they called them home theater installers or home theater professionals. And again, if you look at the report that was generated here, and this is, for example, at page A220 of the record, they were called certified installers throughout. Certified professional installers. The word home theater doesn't appear in there.
It does in the designer classification.
It does. It doesn't appear in their report.
And it does in the installer classification in that that's what they're supposed to be able to do. Home theater is one of the things mentioned both for installer 1 and installer 2. It's not the only thing they do, but it's one of the things they do.
I'm reading from the report that the surveyor gave to DirecTV about what they did. Background and objectives. Throughout this report, they are told that certified installers or certified professional installers were surveyed. They translated that into certified home theater installers, certified home theater professionals, because it sounded better and it sounded more relevant. And I think the point is we can all speculate as to how qualified anybody was, but there's a tried and true method of figuring it out, which is to ask. And if you don't ask, there's no way to test it. We have no way of knowing what any of these people know. We're not taking the position that they're asserting that we are, which is under no circumstances could you ever possibly do something without asking. That's certainly not the case, nor do we need to do that. But the case is here that you should have asked. If you had asked, we would know, and we would all be on the same page about what they did or didn't have as qualifications, and there was no justification for doing it. So we've met our burden on that issue, and I believe that for that reason as well as others, that survey is unreliable. If there are no further questions, I don't know that there is anything else that I...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Masters. So, Mr. Landau, we'll give you a minute if you have anything further.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just very quickly, on the installer survey, they say the problem is we didn't screen. We didn't ask screening questions. Of course, we did screen by picking the people who are the respondents of the survey, which is the screening happened not by asking questions, as you might need to do if you're picking people off the street, but by picking people who do this day in, day out. And there was testimony in this by Mr. Becca. So
does
said
the
these
record
people,
show if it's within a particular geographic area? Or
these were done across the country, Your Honor.
Okay.
There were 500 people, and it was. The record does show that. So again, they're the ones who says, well, we don't know this and that. But they have the burden, if they're wanting to say the survey is inherently unreliable, of showing some flaw. What they're saying when you get to it, and I think Judge Grady also said this, is the only fair comparison is digital DirecTV to digital cable. Well, that's not fair because, in fact, there's a lot of cable that's not digital. And one of the things we want to do is tell consumers, hey, DirecTV, you're always getting digital signals. With cable, a lot of times, you're not.
Why didn't you say that?
Well, Your Honor, that we did say that. That's exactly what the disclaimer says. And again,
the disclaimer. But we were talking about, forget the disclaimer. The disclaimer is invisible. If you take the disclaimer out, you have a plainly misleading, use your language, you like misleading instead of false, plainly misleading.
With respect, Your Honor, we'd say it's not plainly misleading if, as they say, the word cable is ambiguous. If,
you should
again,
just
page
run
30,
an ad that says, with cable, it's hit or miss. You know, with us, it's reliable, and be done with it.
That's one way to do it, Your Honor. But again, there's not just one right
that's
way to do it.
That's the honest way to do it. You did the dishonest way.
Well, Your Honor, again, the point is, if they brought in a consumer survey to show that, then
consumer survey.
But they themselves have said it's ambiguous, Your Honor. And if it's ambiguous, and it doesn't necessarily mean that, they're trying to get a windfall here. And Judge Grady said
they're trying to get a windfall. What is your client trying to do here?
Well, we're just trying to emphasize the fact that with DirecTV you get digital signals,
Why didn't you make the disclaimer visible?
Well, Your Honor, again, if you're going to that's something you need evidence on.
It's a deceptive ad, as Judge Grady said. What would there be for a trial?
And, Your Honor, frankly, if the disclaimer is visible, Judge Grady's injunction says any and all ads based on this consumer survey, that is something that is broader than the particular language of this ad.
Well, certainly it is perfectly legitimate to fence in with an injunction someone who seems to be a serial deceiver.
Well, Your Honor, again, I mean, serial is going beyond the record in this case. But again, I mean, the advertising is the lifeblood of competition.
Is honest advertising?
Absolutely not. But that's
this is not honest advertising.
Well, Your Honor, with respect, since a substantial portion of cable is analog, we respect that. Please submit that it is at the least ambiguous, and there should be consumer survey.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.